With the fall of Roe v. Wade, the fight against abortion has taken new directions. What is the state of the pro-life movement today, and what needs to be done to make abortion illegal and unthinkable in all 50 states? That's what we're going to talk about today on Crisis Point. Hello, I'm Eric Sammons, your host and the editor-in-chief of Crisis Magazine. Before we get started, I just want to encourage people to like and subscribe to the channel, let other people know about it. We always appreciate that. Also, you can follow Crisis Magazine on all those different social media channels, and our handle is just always at Crisis Mag. So our guest today, we have a special guest today, Prudence Robinson, who is the host of EWTN Pro-Life Weekly. She used to work for the national pro-life group Susan B. Anthony List before that. EWTN Pro-Life Weekly airs every Thursday night at 10 p.m. Eastern Time. She has been featured in numerous national media outlets, including the Daily Caller, Washington Times, and The Federalist. Welcome to the program, Prudence.
Thank you so much for having me. Really excited to be here.
Okay, I have the most important question first. Did you or did you not have the greatest confirmation class teacher ever?
I did. I had the most fantastic confirmation teacher ever. His name was Eric Sammons. And he taught me everything I need to know about being a warrior for Christ when I was, you know, becoming confirmed. So
very good. So for those who probably most people don't know, but Prudence actually was the same age as my oldest daughter. And they were in the same homeschool group together. And our parish priest very nicely allowed me to teach all the homeschool kids confirmation. Prudence, your sister was also in it, and Anna, and I'm not making this up. That is seriously one of the best things I've ever done. Like, as far as I really have great memories of it. That was such a great group of kids. I loved all you guys. It really was great.
It was so great. And we actually held most of the classes at my house, I think, or maybe
houses
or something like that. But I remember such fond memories too. Some of my closest friends growing up were in that class together, and you taught us so well. We had an expert teacher. So
I muddled through, but and you guys seem to have turned out okay. So I couldn't have screwed you up too much. So let's get started. And a little bit about you first, though. Why did you decide to get into full-time pro-life work?
Yeah, well, ever since I was very young, I've been very pro-life. My family raised me to be pro-life. And my sister, Mia, who was in that confirmation class with me, she is 23 days younger than me, and she was adopted from Vietnam. And so her adoption story is really what first enabled me to understand what abortion is, you know, because the alternative for a lot of women, unfortunately, to adoption is abortion. And I just became very aware of the fact that had Mia not been adopted, she wouldn't have been a part of our life, and our family would have been so different. And so that really motivated me to fight for the right to life of all people, all unborn babies. And I got my start in the movement praying in front of abortionist Leroy Carhart's late term abortion clinic that was in Germantown for a long time, which was about 15 minutes from my house. Since then, that clinic has closed down, praise God, but Carhart still performs abortions in Maryland, in Bethesda, and has a late-term abortion facility in Nebraska as well. So that's kind of how I got my start. And then I knew I wanted to work in politics, work in DC, and the pro-life issue was the one that I was the most passionate about. So I was blessed to get an internship at the Susan B. Anthony List, which is now called Susan B. Anthony Pro-Life America. And I worked in their communications department for about 3 years, really just learning the ins and outs of the movement, who the key players are, what's at stake. And that's also how I got to know Catherine Hadro, who was the former host of Pro-Life Weekly. And that's how this opportunity came about for me as well, through that job at Susan B. Anthony List. So that was kind of my journey here.
Yeah. And I remember our families, both in front of Leroy Carhart's abortion clinic, when it first started up. We were still in Maryland at the time, and it was just awful. Because for those who don't know, he's one of the few abortion providers in the country who does very late term abortions. And he started up in Maryland, I guess that was around 2008, 2009, something like that. And we spent many days in front of that clinic. And I was very happy here when it shut down. But of course, like you said, he's still operating. So we need to keep working.
Right.
Now, like most young people, your entire life has been lived in not only a post-Roe world, in a Roe world, but also a Casey world. Mm-hmm. So how did you react when Dobbs came down?
So I was at the court that morning, and a lot of people weren't exactly sure what day it was going to be, because for people who don't know, the way that it works is these cases that the Supreme Court considers each year, they don't tell you the exact day or time when they're going to release an opinion or a decision on a case. You kind of have to wait, and they release the days that they're going to announce opinions, but not the exact opinions. And so a lot of people thought that Dobbs wouldn't happen that day. But regardless of that, pro-life groups had been out in front of the court at every possible decision day so that when the decision came down, we would be ready to celebrate. So I was kind of that mindset as well. I was like, okay, it probably won't happen today, but I'll head to the court anyway just to see. And I just remember, you know, walking towards the court and starting to hear a lot of cheering, a lot of excitement. And I was like, wow, I think it's happening. And then, yep, sure enough, got the notification on my phone that Roe versus Wade and Casey had been overruled. And it really was a moment where you kind of just had to stop and praise God, because we've been waiting for this moment for so long, since before I was born, long before I was born, since Roe versus Wade was first decided. America has been under the thumb of really just some of the most extreme abortion jurisprudence in the world. You know, most people don't realize that Roe versus Wade allowed for abortion on demand up until the moment of birth in our country for far too long. And a lot of countries actually got ahead of us in that period when it comes to protecting life. You know, the majority of European countries have limits on abortion at either 15 or 12 weeks. So the fact that we in America, the leaders of the free world, were allowing abortion on demand up until the moment of birth, it was unconscionable. And so it really was a cause for celebration and for rejoicing. And I think one of the things that struck me the most was that this decision came down on the Feast of the Sacred Heart. And that really just highlighted for me how much of a spiritual battle this is and what a great victory we have won. It was certainly a cause for rejoicing among all of us in the movement.
Yeah, I will admit, I mean, I've been involved with pro-life work since the early 90s for a very long time. And I'm not a real emotional guy, but I teared up. I mean, I just couldn't help myself. It was just because and mostly was thinking of all the people who have done so much. I mean, just the warriors who came before us, who have, you know, just done. I mean, particularly those who go to the abortion clinic every week in, week out. Yes. You and I both know people like this that just, they're there every single week and they just never stop going. And it doesn't matter what the weather is. And to especially in states where also now abortion is basically at least restricted or banned, even the fact that, I mean, it was very emotional to think about all the work that had been done. And like you said, the spiritual connection of the fact that came down the Feast of the Sacred Heart. Also this year, which was the nativity of St. John the Baptist. So it really was just an amazing and emotional day really for all of us.
Right. Yeah. An answer to prayer for sure. And the thing that made me emotional too, was just thinking about all the babies that are going to be saved. I mean, and you've seen these pro-life laws start to go into effect. And in states like Texas, the abortion numbers have been cut in half. It really goes to show how important it is to change the laws, even though changing public opinion on this issue is a whole other battle. You've got to have those pro-life laws really setting the tone for the way our nation is going to operate when it comes to this and saving these unborn lives.
Yeah. So for 50 years, the pro-life movement was kind of directed towards the number one first goal was the overturn of Roe. And now that we have that, how does the pro-life movement have to shift? What is the what should the focus be now?
Right. So what overturning Roe versus Wade did, very simply, was it put the power back in the hands of people in the states. And now, instead of being a one front battle where we're trying to overturn Roe versus Wade on the national level, it's a 50 front battle. We are, you know, working to enact laws in all 50 states that will protect unborn lives. And thankfully, this is also a cause for rejoicing. The day that Roe versus Wade was overturned, there were already about half of the states that had pro-life laws on the books. My last count of this was 24 states have either enacted laws or moved to enact laws that essentially ban abortion. Now, 14 of those states' laws have actually gone into effect, and the remaining 10 are facing legal hurdles, or perhaps there's pro-abortion executives, governors that are blocking those pro-life laws that are already in place. So now it's really about going into those states, figuring out what the unique strategy is going to be in all 50 states, and making sure that that happens. It's not going to be easy in some states. You know, I think Michigan is a really good example of this, where since 1931, they've had a law on the books banning abortion. But because they have an extreme pro-abortion governor now, Governor Gretchen Whitmer, there's no way that law is going into effect. So We have to be talking to people on the ground, making sure people know about her extremism and working to get her out of office in November. So that's just an example of the type of strategy that we're going to need to take. And again, as I mentioned, that's going to happen in all 50 states.
Yeah, I'm going to put up this map on the screen that is basically, it's from a pro-abortion website. So like they say, expanded access, protected, not protected. Not protected means good. Hostile means good,
right?
And legal. And I think that for those who are watching, you can kind of see the lay of the land. Obviously, the darker is the best, right. The darker red it is. And so like you mentioned, like Michigan, they listed as, I think, hostile or not protected. Yeah, I think that's
hostile.
And so like, but the situation there is the governor there, she's extremely pro-abortion. And so, you know, while it's hostile, really, she has to go, right? I mean, that's
right. Yeah. And what's very fascinating about this is that in Michigan, the legislature just failed to install in November. They wanted to have a vote on abortion and essentially enshrine the right to abortion in the state, put that in the Constitution. But they couldn't get enough votes to even have that be a vote in November as a ballot referendum or initiative. So that just goes to show Michiganders are totally against this extremism from Governor Whitmer. I mean, this woman kept churches and grocery stores closed during COVID-19, but kept abortion facilities open and deemed abortions essential care. And this is not what Michiganders want. And they have to make that known in November at the ballot box.
Yeah. So let's talk about another state right now, which is Kansas. And we all were very excited, obviously, when Dobbsville, when we heard there's going to be the vote. But of course it failed. So what I want you to do, if you could you explain exactly what was on the ballot and then maybe explain why you think it failed?
Yeah, happy to. So Kansas on the ballot had an amendment called the Value Them Both Amendment. And this was a confusing amendment. I'll just start by saying that. I think one of the main reasons that it failed is because people really didn't know what they were voting for. And these ballot initiatives, these referendums, they have a history of being notoriously confusing. So a lot of people in the movement, while we were disappointed that this happened, it wasn't a huge surprise. But this amendment was actually a neutral amendment. It simply would have made it so that there can never be a right to abortion stated in the Constitution, simply that would not be allowed in the state. And legislators would have the ability, the power to legislate on abortion as they've been elected to do. So they could pass a 15-week limit, a 20-week limit. If they wanted to allow abortions up to a point, this would still be allowed should the amendment have been passed. But that being said, it was a pro-life initiative, and that pro-life people were pushing for it. And, you know, the end goal of we in the pro-life movement is to end abortion in these states. And I think the ultimate reason that this failed is because the abortion industry knows that. They know that we are working to end abortion in the country. And now with Roe versus Wade overturned, that has been made abundantly clear. And, you know, it's very interesting too. The pro-life movement has always had an incremental strategy, but the overturning of Roe kind of threw that out because they didn't just say you can only pass 20-week limits on abortion. We're only going to ban late-term abortion. They said every state has the power to do whatever they want on this issue. And that means that half of the country is going to ban abortion because the majority of Americans don't want the extremism that we have had. And so in Kansas, I think you were just seeing people on the pro-abortion side really being motivated to make sure that abortion was still going to be accessible. And I just think we weren't totally on the mark when it came to the support that we had for that amendment. And so unfortunately, it failed. The left was really good at labeling this as a total ban on abortion and something that was totally going to constrict women and something that was going to be really dangerous for the, quote, fundamental rights of women, which we know is a total lie. But they really had the higher ground on the messaging here, and they were able to confuse a lot of people and convince them that they needed to vote no.
We'll be back after a quick break. Playlist shuffled? Check. Drinks on ice? Check. Z-Biotics? Make the most of your time with friends by starting your evening with Z-Biotics, the only pre-alcohol probiotic designed to make those rough mornings after drinking alcohol a thing of the past. Z-Biotics is key for those who live for the moment. Visit ZBiotics.com to learn more.
Yeah, so it seems to me that the majority, so you have your two quote-unquote extremes. One would be what basically what Roe v. Wade was, which is abortion on demand all 9 months. Right. And then you have what we want on the other side, which is complete, not one abortion at all, at any time, anywhere is legal. Mm-hmm. It seems to me that the majority of the Americans are closer to what we want, but they're not really there. And it's like if you give them, like, it seems like they would take, most of them would take 6 week, 8 week, 12 week cutoffs. But if you present it as either complete abortion or no abortion whatsoever, I feel like they take, they'll say, well, if I only have those two choices, I'd rather have complete abortion than no abortion. Does that seem to be your sense, or am I too pessimistic about the American people?
No, I think that's exactly right. I think a lot of people, even though Roe versus Wade is overturned now, people didn't even realize the extremism that allowed for. And it's because of what you just mentioned. You know, the left has the ability to say, no, we still want to allow you to have some abortions. We don't want to limit you to having no abortions at all. And so I think you're right that a lot of people just don't realize how extreme it is. And it's really a hurdle now, the pro-life movement, a challenge we face is helping people understand that we are on the side of common sense. We are the ones fighting for the position that is actually more aligned with what these people believe. I mean, you know, the Democrats want people who are strongly pro-life to use their taxpayer dollars to fund brutal late-term abortions. But people don't know that. And it's frustrating. I'm starting to get somewhat pessimistic as well. It takes a lot to get people to understand just the simple realities of this issue. And I agree with you. I think there's a huge education gap when it comes to what people really know about this.
Yeah, don't get beat down like me, Prudence.
Doing my best over here. I'm doing my best, but it's hard.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I know. I know it is. So do you think, like in most states, is the best strategy? I mean, I know it depends on the state, because what you do in Alabama, for example, is going to be different than what you do in Oregon or something like that. But do you think it's wise then in these states that are a little bit more mushy, a little bit more purple, I guess you'd say, to try for 12-week bans or something like that? Or do you think we should always try for, let's go the full way and get and try for a full ban?
You know, that's a really good question. And you're hitting smack on the head. Something that is really kind of a cause for debate within the movement right now, I would say. You know, I think one of the biggest hurdles right now is that there are some members of Congress, some pro-life groups who think we should be fighting for all-out bans on abortion. And I can see where they're coming from, because, you know, when you look at how this has played out in just the couple of months since Roe has been overturned, you have half of the states wanting to completely ban abortion. You only have really one state right now where there's a 15-week limit enacted that's sort of like what is standing, and that's in Florida. That 15-week limit has been enacted, and babies are saved past 15 weeks in Florida, which is a great win. I think it's important to emphasize that we'll take what we can get. You know, it's important to save every single baby, and it's better to have a 15-week limit on abortion than no limit at all. But I think you really have to look at the way that this is playing out on a grand scale. And if the Supreme Court is saying, if you want to ban abortions, do it, then pro-life Congress people in the pro-life movement should be messaging that way. We should not be afraid to say what we really want, especially because now, just like in Kansas, as we were talking about, the Democrats know that that's what we want. We shouldn't hide behind, you know, incremental limits anymore if we don't have to. And so where I do think there are some states like Florida, for example, where we have to work with that 15-week ban and we have to keep working to move that mark closer to conception, to fertilization, take that win, but also not be afraid to go on offense here. We have the higher ground and it's got to be a full court press now to protect these babies. We have the resources, you know, we have pro-life pregnancy centers throughout the country that are ready to come alongside these women and we've got to use them.
Did you see the clips of the Babylon Bee guy on Joe Rogan's podcast?
I did. Yes.
And what I thought was amazing about that was it was a great educational moment. What's it? I think his name's Seth Dillon. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah, okay. That sounds right. Okay. Don't quote me on that. But.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Whoever knows. But anyway, yeah. But Babylon Bee guy. And I just thought it was amazing because it was clear Joe Rogan, you know, who has the most popular podcast on earth. He has one of the biggest audiences on earth. And he is a knowledgeable guy. He researches these things. He clearly did not know what the status was of abortion before Dobbs, and he didn't really understand. And I think that's very common of a lot of people in America, like you were saying. And I think though, like the making the point that if we're going to have a line, well, if we're all going to follow the science of where the line is, right, that a person is protected by law, well, then, like, I think Dylan was saying something like, you know, is it some magical line when they go through the birth canal? Is it a magical line at some arbitrary date, 15 weeks? Like, the only thing that where something happens is actually conception, scientifically, right, that is. And so I think you're right that we should never apologize for the fact that we believe abortion should be legal 100% of the time. But I also think realistically, getting laws passed right now because of the woeful education of most Americans, and we're not going to get any help from the media, except for EWTN, of course, then we're just going to have to pass what we can. Like here in Ohio, where I live, we have a 6-week like heartbeat type bill.
Right.
And I think that's great because it's shutting down all the abortion clinics here because most women, they don't even necessarily know that they're pregnant at that point. And yeah. So ultimately for them, it is a complete ban. And so, I mean, the abortion clinic, we all go to the Planned Parenthood here in Cincinnati, they're not doing abortions anymore. So it's like, you know, this is a great thing, even though it's a 6-week ban. And technically I would prefer at conception ban.
Right. Absolutely. And like you say, we have to take those wins when we can get them. And in Ohio, like that is essentially almost a ban on abortion. And so praise God that abortions aren't happening at that facility. And I agree with you on that for sure.
Yeah. So I think we should be realistic. And like, I have seen some pro-lifers who will attack the incremental laws. And I just don't think that's a good, I don't see why to do that, because saying that abortion should be illegal after 15 weeks isn't saying that you like it before 15 weeks or think it's okay. It's just saying, yeah, all these babies should be protected. I'm protecting half of them at least. Let's try to see what we can do. So, but I know it is a debate. Okay, so now what should individual Catholics, like most of us, we don't host a pro-life TV show or anything like that. And a lot of people aren't even involved in pro-life groups or anything like that, but they're pro-life and they live in a state now where it is debatable. I mean, maybe it's not California or something like that, but where it is being debated.
Right.
What do you think is the best thing that your individual pro-lifer can do to try to make the country more pro-life or make their state more pro-life?
That's a great question. I think it really comes down to, you know, we've talked the talk for so long in the pro-life movement that we want to save these babies. And now that Roe versus Wade has been overturned, it's time to walk the walk. We have to make sure we know where our pro-life pregnancy resource centers are. If there's a Planned Parenthood in your neighborhood, there probably is, that there are a lot of them. Make sure that you're praying, you're prayerfully protesting outside of those clinics. One group that I really look to for inspiration on this level, when it comes to what can I do on the ground, is Sidewalk Advocates for Life. This is a group that has chapters all over the country, and they have been successful in shutting down dozens of abortion clinics just by their prayerful witness and their testimony to these women as they're walking into abortion clinics. So if you're looking to get involved in a more tangible way in the movement, I think that finding your closest Sidewalk Advocates for Life chapter is a great way to start. Obviously, I think it's important too that, you know, we're emphasizing the humanity of these unborn children. When you have a conversation, when you have an opportunity to have a conversation with someone who might not totally agree with you, we have to talk about what you were just mentioning, which is that, you know, the only time that something happens is at conception. And after that, we see so many signs of life. And groups like the Charlotte Lozier Institute have great resources for this, where they've really laid out what happens at each moment of gestation. And you can point to so many facts that just emphasize the beauty and the preciousness of these little babies growing. You know, at 6 weeks, they have the number of times that the baby's heart has beat, how much blood is pulsing through their veins. They've explained that these babies have a preference for their left or right hand at just 12 weeks old. They respond to their mother's voice. They hiccup, they yawn. So I think those are some really, really tangible things to point people to help them understand what's really at stake here. If someone's on the fence about, is this a life or not? Is this worth protecting? That's going to be the most effective thing to talk to them about, that baby itself, you know?
Yeah, I think to me, I've always kind of said there's, and I said this at the beginning, that there's two goals we have. One is to make abortion illegal, and the other is to make it unthinkable.
Right.
And illegal is really the doing the political work necessary to change the laws, which great start with Dobbs, and now we keep going. And the unthinkable is, like you were saying, like the education that we do with the people around us, that we make it clear to other people, the people we know, that this is a human life and it deserves protection. I know, as far as like a couple of things that I did start doing once the Dobbs came down, I didn't even know the day before Dobbs came down who my state reps were. I don't think anybody knows who their state reps are. Nobody cares who they are. But the day of Dobbs, I contacted both of them, you know, my state rep, the state senator, and said, okay, you need to vote for everything that bans or restricts abortion. And if you don't, I will never vote for you. Because nobody cares who they were, because they had, I mean, you know, state reps don't do hardly anything, it seems like to me. But it's like, now they're very important. They're quite important.
Yeah.
And so I would encourage people to do that. Definitely contact yours. And honestly, run, because it's not like these people get how many votes? And in a lot of these places, they're getting a few thousand votes to win.
Yeah.
And so, run and become one of the people who votes for that in the actual state house. Another thing I did was I added another crisis pregnancy center in the area to support. We went to a fundraiser. My wife and I went to a fundraiser for a local crisis pregnancy center. And they said after Dobbs, they had a very large increase in abortion-minded women coming to the pregnancy center, because they weren't going to the Planned Parenthood anymore. They thought abortion, they weren't even sure what the status was of abortion. And so they went there. And so I do think our crisis pregnancy centers are probably seeing an increase in women coming to them. And so we need to do everything we can to help them as well.
Yeah, I totally agree. And especially because there are these pro-choice, pro-abortion groups out there that are straight up attacking these centers. We've got to make sure that we're helping them get all of the support and the resources that they need, because the pro-abortion side is now just becoming so hostile to people who think like us, people who want to save unborn babies. It's very simple, but they're performing acts of violence now. You've seen over 100 churches vandalized. You've seen almost the same number of pregnancy centers vandalized, windows smashed through. So we've got to come around these pregnancy centers. And I think you make a fantastic point about running for state rep too. And I'll also just say, one thing that I've learned is that is not a full-time job at all. Like, even if you've got a lot going on in your life, running for state rep, it's only going to take maybe 1 or 2 months out of your year when you're in session and you go and you pass laws to save babies. It's pretty straightforward. And I think that's a great idea. I think people like us should be running for positions like that.
Now what exactly can, you know, so we're both Catholic, obviously it's a Catholic show here. What can Catholics do in particular? I mean, Catholics have been the heart of the pro-life movement from the beginning. Mm-hmm. We love our Protestant brothers and sisters and others who join us in the pro-life movement. But at the same time, we have been the heart, let's be honest. So what can Catholics do, specifically Catholics do in this time now that the, like you said, it's a 50 front fight that we're in?
Yeah. I think the most important thing is making sure people understand what the Catholic Church actually teaches about abortion. I know I don't have to tell you this, but with the president that we have in office, people are very confused about what Catholics believe. And he has betrayed Catholics when it comes to this, especially in his recent speech in Pennsylvania. He has made abundantly clear that if you are pro-life, if you are fighting for the sanctity of life, if you're fighting for the sanctity of marriage, for good, strong families, he is not going to fight for you. So we really have to take this into our own hands. I'm really thankful for some strong bishops in our country, like Archbishop Nauman. During that Kansas fight, you know, he was going to the pulpit and preaching to people, you need to vote yes to value them both, protect these unborn children. So we need to be talking to people in our church about this, making sure that we're the ones who are championing our faith right now. And I think when it comes to living out our faith as Catholics, it's really about living by example. You know, if we're going to restore a culture of life, we need to be the ones doing that. I was very blessed to go to Franciscan University. I know a lot of your children were also able to. Some of them are there now with my younger sister. And it's at places like that where people that are my age and people that are a little bit younger are really going to be formed to fight to restore that culture of life. So you've got to make sure you're encircling yourself with people who are going to help you in that battle. And it is a spiritual battle. And we have to be speaking the truth right now, getting married, having lots of kids, you know, and really just equipping Catholics around us to fight this fight. And again, this is our moment, you know, with Roe versus Wade overturned, people are starting to realize the extremism that once existed in our nation. And we've got to capitalize on that. We've got to run with it and make sure that the America that we want to live in is the one that we actuate in the years to come.
Yeah. And I think another witness that we can call people to is the witness you mentioned with your own sister, like adoption, that yes. Really to be there, because it's great that more babies will be surviving, and that's what we've always wanted. And we've always been there. I mean, the whole lie about, like, we don't care about babies after they're born, we all know that's just stupid.
Right.
But the truth is also, though, it will hopefully mean more babies. I mean, not that we always hope babies are put for adoption. We hope they're, mm-hmm. you know, in the best situation for them.
Of course.
But there'll probably be more adoptions available. And so Catholic families in particular need to step up. I mean, it really is. I mean, adopting a child is beautiful in so many ways, but it also is in always a work of evangelization for a Catholic family to do this, because you bring a child into your home who might not have been raised Catholic, to be raised Catholic, to know the faith, to get those. I mean, it's just such a great blessing and gift that you're giving to those child. So you're giving them more than just life. You're giving them spiritual and eternal life in so many ways. So I just encourage people to, you know, consider adoptions. Well, I'm asking for all these big things, like run for state senate, be good, adopt a kid. All these minor things I'm asking people.
Yeah, it's easy. Come on.
Yeah, anybody can do it. So before we finish here, just what are some, we talked about ways to make it legal. What are some other ways, maybe one or two other ways that we can really try to make abortion unthinkable in our land, where people are just, look at it like we look at slavery today. That's really the ultimate goal, is we want Americans to look at abortion like we think of slavery today. It's just this horrible crime that nobody would ever think about doing anymore.
Yeah, that's a great question. I really think it's about having these conversations with people. I think prayer is a really important thing too. That's something we haven't really yet touched on, but as Catholics, I mean, that's our ultimate weapon, right? And I think it's important to help other Catholics and other people of faith understand the gravity of this situation. You know, when we're having conversations with people, make sure they really know what's at stake, and make sure they know how they can get involved. And I think sometimes it can be daunting. You know, this is a big mission. We're trying to save babies from abortion. And so I think bringing it down to something that's simple, something that's tangible, is really, really important. And so I think, yeah, just having conversations with people as they come, and just praying to the Lord that you can be his vessel and speaking the truth about this. I think another great thing to do is to be supporting pro-life organizations that are in your area. You know, on the federal level, on the national level, rather, I'll just mention a few of them, things that you can share on social media and stuff like that. Live Action, Students for Life of America, they're doing a great job of making sure people know what abortion is via their amazing videos. They're talking to students on college campuses and things like that about the reality of abortion and what you can do to save babies. I think, you know, promoting the work that they're doing is so important. Again, we mentioned Sidewalk Advocates for Life and just your local Right to Life group. You know, most counties have one, or even on the state level, there's a Right to Life group that you can get involved with. And so I do think while it's a big task, it's about taking it down to the local level and figuring out what you can do, what small thing you can do to save a life, I think is really important.
I think that's very true, the local part. I really do. Like, if your city, if it's just start at your city, if there's an abortion clinic in your city, do everything you can to get that shut down. Work with crisis pregnancy in your city, what have you, your state level. And if your state is great, let's say you live in a state where it you know, abortion is illegal, things are going great, you can like prayerfully adopt another state like California or something like that and help them, you know, to pray for them as well. But I really do think it's the local level, because that's where you're going to have the most impact. Most people are going to have the most impact. So I think we really need to do that. Support your local crisis pregnancy center, like you said, and pray. And prayer, obviously, that we can't do anything without starting with that. So
yeah. And the person that I always pray to on this the most is Mary, because, you know, if it wasn't for her, Christ wouldn't be able to have come into the world to save us. And abortion is totally the opposite of that redeeming sacrifice that the Lord made, and she's the mediatrix. So if you're looking for someone to pray to on this, pray to Mary.
Yes, ask the Blessed Mother, and she's a very powerful intercessor, as we know. Yes. Okay, well, I think we'll wrap it up here, Prudence. I really appreciate it. Now, so people can obviously EWTN, but and I'll link to I assume there's a website for EWTN Pro-Life Weekly.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about like what the show does and you know what you have coming up.
Yeah, absolutely. So we report on everything having to do with the pro-life issue. It's the most important time to be reporting on this, as we've been discussing all throughout this hour. But we go into the states. I was in Kansas for the Value in Both Amendment. We're heading into some other states soon, really just to make sure people that are living in those states have a pulse on what's going on with the abortion issue in your area. We talk to members of Congress, we talk to people working with these pro-life groups on the national and local level, and we share stories of miracles, babies being saved, ways that people's hearts have been converted to the pro-life cause. Really anything on the pro-life issue, you can find it in our reporting at Pro-Life Weekly. And we air on Thursday nights at 10 p.m., as you mentioned earlier, 10 p.m. Eastern. You can follow along the show on our website, EWTNProLifeWeekly.com. And you can also follow me on Twitter at Prue's Pulse to see more about what we're doing on the show and things that we're working on.
I will put links to all that in the show notes. It is a great show. You're doing a great job. I was so excited. I mean, I told the kids, of course, I'm like, you're not going to believe who's not the host. So they were all excited. All my daughters, you know, who are friends with you, they were all excited and stuff.
Oh, so sweet. That's
yeah.
So
and you've been doing a great show. You have great guests on there. So I encourage everybody to watch it Thursdays at 10. And I know you repeat it because, frankly, 10 p.m. you start getting near people like my age's bedtime.
Yeah.
It's repeated throughout the week, and you have clips, I know, on YouTube and things like that. So I encourage people to check those out.
That's right. Yes. Thank you so much for all those kind words, and please continue to pray for us and for our mission.
Absolutely. God bless you.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Until next time, everybody. God love you.